Before we begin then, let us all take a moment to pay homage to the fully awakened one, the magnificent one, the infinitely merciful one, the unvanquished one, the undefeated one. He who is the greatest teacher they have ever seen in the 10,000 world systems in which we live. Let us also take this moment to remind ourselves how extremely fortunate we are to be in receipt of his teaching. And let us make this moment a moment that matters in our lives as we renew our pledge to ourselves to free ourselves from suffering once and for all. So, to see what the day holds for us, let us pay homage to the Buddha, observe the precepts, and make our way forward.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
So first thing, I'm going to show you a video. What? Why are you giggling about it? It's a very special video. Oh, you feel ticklish or something. A very special video. You'll hear the voice of a very renowned scientist. What? You don't want to see that video? No? Hang on a second. Last week I said the same thing. And you were on the edge of your seats, wanting to watch the video. Today I give you the same story and today you don't want to watch the video. What's up? You got out of the wrong side of the bed or something? No? Not interested? Why not? Do you remember we had this conversation last week? Or is this like a deja vu moment or something? We had this conversation last week, yeah? I said I was going to show you a video. You were all very excited about it. And from the moment I said it, you were like, when? Swami, I said, when can we see the video? Huh? So you're going to hear from Stephen Hawking, a man who needs no introduction. Still don't want to say it? It's gonna explain to you how vexation works. And it's a very rare video. You will never see it anywhere else. No? Still don't want to see it? Buddha? No? What's up? Why so dull? What does this tell you about life, about existence? See, rewind a week. You were right where you were today, and I told you the same story. And you were all hyper excited about it. You really wanted to see it because you thought, today is the day I'm going to understand vexation, and you did. Hang on, any newcomers? Just give me a quick show of hands if today is the first time you're here. Ah. So they want to see the video now, don't they? Oh, you should have come last week. See, last week we showed everyone a video. And they loved it. Especially the ending. See, now, do you know what's going on in their minds? The newcomers today, as I say what we watched last week, and how everyone was looking forward to it, right, and how you all understood what vexation was after watching it, now they want to watch it. But none of you do. What's the deal? What's the deal? That is the deal with vexation. So if you didn't get to see the video last week, I'm afraid I'm not going to show it to you today.
Oh.
Says newcomers. So it wasn't all it was hyped up to be, don't worry. It was a video that helped you realize what vexation was. You were really looking forward to something. This is what we call expectation. Expectation keeps you going, doesn't it? Expectation is the spice. It's what piques your interest. It's what makes life worth living. That hope. Hope of fulfillment. Hope of achievement. That. So for the newcomers, what we did last week was, I said exactly what I said just a moment ago, and then I put a video up on screen, and most of it was just utter total rubbish. It wasn't really a video at all. In the end, you couldn't watch anything, it was just a blue screen, right? So we had an Anagarika Mahatya who was sat by the desk, and he was pretending that there were some technical faults, when in fact, he was all doctored up. So we edited the video to give you the impression that we were going through some technical issues. That was all part of the video. So if you go back, you can watch the video from last week. It's on YouTube. Excuse me. And so you realized that all this excitement was just in vain. But you only realized that at the end when I explained to you, that was the whole purpose of the video. See, now I ask you, shall I show it to you again? And you're not excited anymore. This is the very reason, ladies and gentlemen, why you can't enjoy the same film the same way twice. Now, there may be some among you who like to enjoy, you know, watch the same movie a few times over, perhaps. But you're not going to experience the same thrill. It's not going to be the same one. You're not going to enjoy the suspense. It's not going to be the same excitement because you've seen it once. You know, that's why they say spoiler alert. Because those are the moments which keep you on your toes. These are the key sellers. You know, when they make a trailer for a movie, what do they do? It's never as good as the trailer, right? The real thing is never as good as the trailer. Because what do they do for the trailer? They cut out all the best bits. The on-edge moments. The suspenseful moments. They cut all that out and they make the trailer. And now you watch that and now what happens to you is you begin to vex. That experience, that feeling is what we refer to as vexation. So what is pleasure then? Would you say today, having experienced and having gone through the guinea pig experiment I did last week, having gone through last week, would you say that that video was a source of pleasure? Would you say so? Would you say then that video was a source of vexation? Let me ask you the question again. Would you say that the video was a source of vexation? Now, before you give an answer, I need you to think about this. Because if it was, or if it were, I should be able to play it again today and you should vex the same. Would you? No, you wouldn't vex the same today. Perhaps if there are new people in the audience today, new members of the audience, they might vex, but you won't. So the video itself is not a source of vexation, is it? Do you understand where I'm coming from? The video itself is not a source of vexation. So was it a source of pleasure then? No. So what does that tell us about the video? It is neither a source of vexation, nor is it a source of pleasure. Are you with me on that? It is neither a source of vexation nor is it a source of pleasure. Because if I showed the same video to you again today, you know, you would be indifferent to it. You'd just watch it and go, yeah, we know, we know. It wouldn't vex you at all. It wouldn't vex you. Do you remember those moments where there was the technical issues and then for a brief moment you could actually see the video? You could actually see something happening. How did you feel in those moments? Relieved, right? You enjoyed those moments. And then when you went again, did you hear inside your mind, you're going, ah, come on, what's going on? Now one good lady came up to me and said, Swami Nohansa, you know, I didn't vex so much about the video itself, but I was really feeling for the man who, for the gentleman who was standing by the computer, and I really felt sorry for him. I really wanted someone to go and assist him. I really wanted someone to go and help him sort it out. So I gave my thanks and compliments to the good lady. You see, but having said that, at the same time, you don't want that person to be in vexation. Because, you know, see, when someone's in pain and you watch that, or you have to watch that, don't you feel that pain? We sometimes internalize that pain, don't we? We cringe in pain, don't we? Like say someone's hurt or someone's fallen from a height, right? And they're whinging in pain. How do you respond to that? Have you ever never caught yourself doing that? What's that connection? Do you see that invisible connection? They're in pain. Why are you? Why are you in pain? See, this is the mystery we need to figure out. Until we figure out this mystery, you can't stop yourself from suffering. Now there may be some among you who faint at the sight of blood. Maybe there are some among you who find it extremely painful to watch someone in pain. Now there are certain websites out there and they record video clips. For, you know, for the love of God, I hope you never have to go on a site like that. Okay? There are certain sites out there. Now, I mean, this is what the world has come to. From time to time, I need to make you aware of what's out there. There are certain sites out there. It is where people go out to vent their vengeance. Don't ask me to name, I won't. There are young children here. They shouldn't have to find themselves on places like that on the internet. So they'll make video clips of how people hurt others. Perhaps they'll stab them, shoot them, rape them. I can see some of you are gobsmacked. You're thinking, what? On this God's earth, people do things like that? Oh yeah. Oh yeah. For vengeance. Revenge. While the other person, the victim, is in excruciating pain, they're crying for their life. Sometimes they'll cut off limbs. Sorry, Sunday morning. But you've got to open your eyes to what is out there. There are sights out there like that. Some countries, they filter them out. You can't get through the firewalls. But in other places, you know, media, rights, freedom of speech, freedom of information, everything's out there. Just because people have the freedom doesn't mean everything should be accessible, in my humble opinion. But this is out there. So you might find it really, you know, you'll feel your tummy roil at the sight of something like that. This is because when you see pain, you experience that pain. How does that work? What is the science behind it? How do you internalize external pain? See, once you begin to understand this, you will learn how to be free from the pains that you experience in your body itself. Remember one day I promised you, I can't stop you from growing old. But what I can help you do is, when old age takes over, ladies and gentlemen, and your body begins to be unkind to you and ungrateful to you for all the bearing up with it that you've done all throughout your life, if you understand the Dhamma that I'm trying to impart on you, you will be free from those pains. You will still experience the pain, but you will not internalize it. In other words, you will not feel that it is you who is in pain. You will just be able to look at the pain objectively. And this is not some weird psychology. It is through realization. I promise you it is possible. I promise you. You know, after all, Buddhist philosophy, the Dhamma is to help us free ourselves from suffering. That's what it is for. I can't stop the inevitable happening in your lives. And of course, you know, there's no age at which things can happen. You know, there are children in the house today, you know, as young as maybe 10, 12, 13. And there are those who are elderly, perhaps, you know, 70s, 80s. Who's to say who goes first? Who's to say who gets bedridden first? You can't say that. But as long as your mind is strong enough, as long as your mind has understood the Dhamma, you will be able to look at things objectively. A pain as just a pain. So this is where we are getting. Now, the question I asked you was the pleasure in the video or was it the pain that was in the video? Which one? Which one? One, the other, or both? Neither is the answer. So if neither is the answer, do you think beauty is in this flower? You see this anthurium flowers here? Yeah. Is, you know, you'd look at it and go, wow, that's very pretty, it's very beautiful. Are you sure beauty is in the flower? In fact, if I asked you, who among you thinks that this is a lovely flower arrangement? Now, you might all put your hand up just to be nice and polite. Because it's the done thing, the said thing, right? We have to be like that. But if you were alone here, and you were able to express your honest opinion, perhaps there may be a few at least in the audience that might go, no, Swaminas, I don't find that particularly attractive. It's not my type. And that's fair enough. You say, that's not my type. It's not blue enough, one might say. It's not rosy enough, another might say. In fact, I like lilies. No anthuriums. I don't like anthuriums. Just look at them. How ugly. Another might say. See, if pleasure was not in the video, I ask you the question, is it in the flowers then? But you'd still experience pleasure, don't you? You experience pleasure in life and you also experience vexation in life. And the problem here is, you attribute pleasure and vexation to the outside world. Therefore, you become victims of the things that happen around you. Don't you feel victimized? Just take a moment and, you know, just consider, you know, a time in your life. Perhaps it was this morning, maybe yesterday, maybe last week, you know, at work, maybe in your family, maybe among friends. Don't you feel victimized? What is this feeling of being victimized? Or at least feeling victimized. You feel that other people hurt you. Yeah? You feel that other people hurt you. You feel that other people are a threat to your happiness. You never felt like that? Of course. You feel that other people don't care enough about you. No? We're all like that. They don't appreciate me enough for all the things I do.
See, we feel like that. They should appreciate me more. We feel like that. But all of these are feelings that we have. Because we feel, we perceive the world in that way. Our perceptions are our perceptions alone, ladies and gentlemen. Sometimes you go walk up to someone like that and ask them, you know, why do you not talk to me? Why don't we see eye to eye? Why are you keeping your distance from me? And sometimes the response they get is, no, I didn't have the slightest intention of doing so. Oh, all right, okay, so sorry, I must have misread you. See, we have our own perception about the world in which we live. And in our perception of the world in which we live, ladies and gentlemen, we always point our finger outwards. And we do it in two ways. One, we say, you make me unhappy. And then we say, you make me happy. In other words, you bring me vexation or pain, and you bring me pleasure or joy. So therefore, this world we can split into two, as we have done the audience today. Those who make me unhappy and those who make me happy. So there are those who we like and those who we dislike. In simple words, our friends and our enemies. Love and hate are two sides of the same coin. That is why one day you will say, get up, you can now sit on the other side. No? And vice versa. We didn't see eye to eye. I thought, you know, you had something against me, but I realized that it was just a mistake. I realized it was just a slip of a tongue. It's fine. You can get up and go and sit on the other side. If I asked you to make a list of your friends and enemies, couldn't you? All right, let's not call them enemies, because you'll say, Swaminas, I don't have enemies. I'm a saint. I don't have enemies. All right, fair enough. Could you not make a list of the people that you like and don't like so much? Honestly. Now, let's get down to earth, right? Let's be real people. You don't have to pretend to be anybody here. Remember, it's just you and I. Okay? And if it's an embarrassing question, I'll never ask you to put your hand up. Unless it's a virtual raise of hands. And then only you and I know that you've got your hand up. For example, put your hand up virtually if you got angry last week. Virtually. So I don't want you to see any hands going up. I just want a virtual raise of hands which only you and I can see. Yeah? Okay. That's good enough for us. See, when you feel that your pleasure and your vexation comes from the outside. In other words, from other people, from other things, from other events, from occurrences. You know, you feel victimized. Now, if I asked you, give me a story of a rough time in your life, I'm sure each and every one of you, if not at least most of you, will have a story to relate to it. You'll say, Swaminathan sir, you know, there was a time when my cousin, right, and I, we just didn't get along. Excuse me. We just didn't get along. Or maybe it was my sister and I, we just didn't get along. Or there was this friend from school, right? We were pals, we were friends, we were in fact best friends. But then, you know, we became a triangle. How so? An equilateral triangle. You know the song, right? When a third person enters, a special third person, and then, you know, it tests the relationship that I have with my friend, or something like that happened. Or there was someone who insulted me. Can you still be insulted? Do you feel insulted? Not right now. You know, are you someone who can still be insulted? If you are, then you will be, you feel victimized. I don't want you to feel victimized. If I can find you in the middle of the street, and I'll be hidden. I'll ask someone to come up to you and say,
they look at you and go, Tadia. Hey, fatso. Or someone look at you and go, hey, chaminda. Say if you're a bit elderly, someone goes, chaminda. Or if perhaps you wear glasses, and someone goes, hey, potte. If you feel insulted, something's wrong with you. If you're short, right, say, average, you're short for your age. Someone goes, hey, shorty. And you feel insulted, you feel victimized. You don't need to be. The Dhamma will help you be free. Because when you feel victimized, you feel that you've got to sort them out. Why do we have the courts? So you can go and sort them out. When someone does injustice to you, when someone is being unjust to you, you have the courts so you can go and sort them out. How about we sort ourselves out? How about you strengthen your mind, you fortify your mind so that you cannot be made angry? Wouldn't you like that? It's possible. It's doable. It's achievable. There are those who have achieved it. I want to help you do that. See, one button can ruin your day, can't it? Just think, early morning you're getting ready for work. Okay? There was this loose button on your shirt. You've been asking the wife to fix it, but she said, yeah, I'll do it. And today's the day that you have to wear that shirt. Right? So today's Monday, and you have a shirt for Monday, there's a shirt for Tuesday, there's a shirt for Wednesday. So on Monday, the button came off. So before Monday comes, the button should be fixed. You've asked the wife to do it, and she said, yes, I will. Weekend came and went, and now it's Monday. So you put on your shirt, and the button has come loose. Now just take yourself into that situation, mentally. And you have to leave on time, because if you don't leave on time, you're going to be late for work, and you're going to get stuck in traffic. Right? So the buttons come off, and now you're annoyed. Just think about all the things that will come out of your mouth at that time. All the things you'll have to say. Or maybe it's your shoelace. You tie it and it snaps. What do you hear you say at that time? I mean, geckos do that. You don't have to be human for that. But you know this happens to you. Or you're trying to zip something up and the zipper comes off. Been there, done that? You know the feeling? Yeah, you know the feeling. Or you open the tap and the water doesn't come. Or you go to get the shaving foam and the person who used it has finished it. And they didn't have the courtesy to replace it. Welcome to life, ladies and gentlemen. See how in these moments you feel victimized? You feel that you are the victim and people out there are out to get you. They're out there to bother you. And you ask this question, why can't you be a little bit more thoughtful? If the gas has run out, why did you have to wait for me to come and order it? Why couldn't you get it? If the hot water's run out, why did you have to wait for me to come and switch on the heater? If the cool water's run out, why did you have to wait for me to come and fill the bottle up and put it in the fridge? Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. On a hot day, and you walk up to the fridge, you open it, and you're looking forward to having that sip of cool water, and what do you see? A cool bottle without the water. You're familiar with this, I'm sure you are. This is life. Makes you annoyed. And how do you feel? victimized. You feel you are a victim of circumstances. And then you go looking for the people who are responsible for that. This is how arguments happen at home. Because you feel you're victimized. You feel someone's doing this to you. What you're not able to see is things objectively. You subjectify things. Someone has done something to me. That is how you feel in these moments. It is all to do with the self. As we make progress on this journey, ladies and gentlemen, I will help you be free from yourself, not from anybody else, just from yourself. Because that is the demon. Yourself. You all feel that you exist, right? Right now? If I were to ask you to come up here and give a speech, right? What is the first speech we've all given in our lives? What self? Myself, right? That's where we all start. Myself. You say, good morning, I am, and you give your name. And I am this old, and you or this young. As you age, you begin to say, I'm this young, right? It's fine. Whatever floats your boat. Because when you're younger, you want to say, I am 6 years old. But when you're 60, I'm 60 years young. It's all right. Let's just carry on. It's fine. You know, whatever floats the boat, whatever keeps you happy, you know, it's fine. You know, after all, you know, that's what we're here for, to be happy, right? So if you like the sound of you saying, I am this years young, so be it, because everyone else is saying, that old wretched woman, she's 60 years old, and she still expects to be invited to the party. That's fine. Right, so then what else might you say? I am from so and so part, this part of the country, right? Or I live in this part of the world. Or you might say, you know, my father's name is this, and this is what he does. This is my mother, and this is what she does, right? And this is my husband, this is my wife, these are my children, right? And, you know, I'll do this for a living. So you talk about whom? Yourself. Isn't this the self that is always victimized? See, when I ask you, what are some things that make you happy? I have to ask you that question specifically with the word you happy. I couldn't ask you this question, could I, for instance? What makes happy? You tell me immediately, Swaminathan, that's grammatically incorrect. Semantically, syntactically, it's wrong. You'll tell me. Because Swaminas, you have to have someone in there. You tell me you have to have either you, me, he, she, we, they. You know, you got to use one of these pronouns and put it in there. That's when the sentence makes sense. So you can't just say what makes happy. You have to say what makes me happy. What makes you happy? Why so? Here's the reason. What makes you happy, sir, doesn't make you happy. If what makes you happy, madam, doesn't make you happy, then is it the thing that makes you happy? Is happiness something you can find in the outside world? See, if you can see the audience, which of course you can't, because that is a special opportunity that I have, from this vantage point, I can see everyone. And I see people who've come from different walks of life. I see the young, I see the elderly. I see the pretty, and I see the... I've dug myself a grave here. I see the pretty, and I see the even more pretty. I see the well-to-do, and I see the even more well-to-do. Huh? But in my life as a monk, right, over the last, what, 6 or so years, I've seen them all. I've seen the poor, I've seen the rich. From the peasants to the ministers, to the great kings. From the young to the old, to the black to the white, right, to the Asians to the Caucasians. I've seen them all. And that's the thing. I've had to see them all. In other words, they've all come to see me. By me, I don't mean me. I mean me. What does it tell us about life? If there are enough specimens for us to study and they've all gone down different paths in life and yet they all U-turn and come back here, what does that tell you about life? None of them have found it. Found what? Found what? Happiness. None of them have found it. Why? Because they're all looking for it from the outside. They're looking for it. They're seeking it. They're searching for it in the hope that one day they will encounter happiness. See, this is why when you watch that video, you are expecting the video to make you happy. In fact, in those brief moments where you actually got to see some footage, you did experience happiness, didn't you? Yes. What I want to propose to you today, ladies and gentlemen, so that we can continue this conversation, as we now start going deeper into the ocean of the Dhamma, is that there's a difference between happiness that I speak of and the happiness that you speak of. These two things are worlds apart. We all speak of happiness, but we're not talking about the same thing. It's the same word, but means very different things. The happiness that you speak of is a happiness that one can achieve when you relieve yourself from pain. Do you remember the finger experiment we did the other day? I asked you to hold your finger up and then bend it backwards, as far back as you can go. And then when you got there, I asked you to bend it a little bit more, almost on the verge of really, you know, it being excruciatingly painful. And then I asked you to hold it there for a moment. And then I asked you to let go of it. And when you let go of it, after having held it there for a few moments, you experienced pleasure. In other words, what you experienced was relief from vexation. What is vexation again? That which you experienced last week. You know, that unfulfilling sensation, that unsatisfactoriness, the wanting for something that you wish to happen. This is what I mean by vexation. I'm trying to express in words a sentiment, an emotion that we all experience all of the time. All the time. When you try to turn the key in your car to get it to start and it doesn't, that's the feeling I'm talking about. Not so much as a mechanic, but as the owner of the car, who wants the car to start to ignite on the first turn. The feeling when you have asked your children to do their homework before you get home, so that you can tuck them into bed, and you turn up, you come back home and you realize they haven't even touched their homework. That feeling I'm talking about. That feeling. That expectation when you arrive home, you wish, you want the dishes to be washed, and it's not done. And then you have to remind him, it's your turn. That feeling. Vexation. On a cool day, I give you a cool glass of water. Do you feel relieved? It's a cool day. It's a cold day. Do you feel relieved? No. What about on a hot day? On a hot day, I give you a nice cold glass of water. What would you say it is? Refreshing. Invigorating. Relaxing. Yeah? So if it is so invigorating and so relaxing and so refreshing, why did it not do the same to you on a cold day? Do you see that the glass of water is not able to bring you that happiness that you think it's going to bring you? It is not the cold glass of water that brought you that happiness. Your vexation and relief from it did. Now in colder countries we have heaters. Yeah, we don't use heaters in Sri Lanka, do we? Oh, do they in New Aurelia? Yeah. Why don't we have them in Colombo? You know, when you're cold and you've got, you know, socks on because it's too cold, you've got a jacket on, and someone says, well, it's nice and warm inside, let's go in. Or maybe someone puts up a fireplace, right? And you walk there and sit around the fireplace and you feel that nice, cozy feeling, nice and warm, yeah? Why is it always nice and warm? You know, we say it's nice and warm, right? Is it always nice and warm? Can you always have that word, the qualifier nice in front of warm? Can you? No. Sometimes you say it's too warm. So, can warmth bring you joy? Can warmth bring you pleasure? The problem is, you think it does. Therefore, when you want the warmth, when you want to be warm and someone takes that away from you, when the power company, like the electric company, maybe the gas company, they cut your supply because you haven't paid the bill or whatever, you ring them up and go, hey, what do you expect? You know, yeah, I'll pay the bill next week. Just please, please turn the gas back on. In some countries, you have to depend on the gas supply to get your heating. In some countries, it's electric that does that for you. So when you don't pay the bill, or maybe there's been some technical issue and there's a power cut. Now, we've experienced power cuts quite a bit over the last few years or so, right? Remember those days? When it was, you know, night and you wanted to go to bed, and if you're accustomed to having the fan on or maybe the air conditioner on as you go to sleep, and there was a power cut, so you couldn't have the aircon on, you couldn't have the fan on, and it was hot and sweaty. Remember that feeling? And you weren't very comfortable. That is this feeling of vexation I'm talking about. In those moments, did you not feel you were victimized? You know, something so simple, just let's say you're wearing a watch and you now need to know the time. It's essential that you need to know the time now. You look at the watch and the battery's dead. That feeling I'm talking about. You feel victimized. You go, stupid watch. Why does it not work? Just the moment I want it to work and it doesn't work. See? So who are you faulting now? The watch. Yeah, we are so good at building a prison, walking inside, shutting the door, throwing the key out and say, who imprisoned me? We are so good at that. So good at that. Come on, let's break out of that. The prison that you have built for yourself. The Buddha says, you know, this is the web that a spider weaves for itself. It gets entangled in it and it says, look what the world has done to me. That is what the Buddha says. Some tribes in some part of the world, you know, I think it's in an African country somewhere, there's a tribe that use a special technique for catching monkeys. In fact, it's not the monkey that they want. Water is very scarce. It is water that they want, but they don't know where to find the water. So here's what they do. they get something like a sort of what do you call it? Labu? Labu Gedi? What's the word for it? Sir? A calabash, right? Calabash. Thank you. So they get a calabash, which is a Labu Gedi for the rest of us. Okay. So they get one of those things and they put something that smells nice, something that smells sweet inside it. And they tie it on a branch somewhere, and then they go into hiding and they wait. So as they wait, monkeys, they get this smell, this sweet smell, and they come looking for it because they want the food. Now this is very salty. This food, although it smells very sweet and it's very appealing, it's very salty. So what the monkey does is it puts its arm inside the calabash and now it clenches its fist. But the thing with this is you can't take your hand out while your fist is clenched. But the monkey doesn't know this. What the monkey wants is the sweet that's inside. Okay? So sorry, that's not the salty part. It's just the sweet. This is very sweet, so it smells sweet, right? So the monkey puts its hand in, and now it wants to take its arm out, but it can't because the fist is clenched. So now they are trapped because the monkey doesn't know that it has to let go. So these people, the tribesmen, what they do is they now come and they catch the monkey because the calabash is tied to a tree and you can't run away. The monkey can't get away. Then what they do is they catch the monkey, now they've trapped it, and then they feed it something like bread, but it's very salty. So once you have once the monkey has eaten that, what's the monkey feeling now? Thirsty. Now the monkey knows where the water is. So now what they do is they let the monkey loose. And then they follow the monkey to the water. Ingenious, right? Yes. But not when you ask the monkey. Now, in the same way, forgive me for saying this, there are ingenious people out there. They do something called advertising. They advertise their wares. They advertise their goods. They advertise their food. They advertise their clothes. They advertise all these things that they invent because they want to make a living. In fact, they want to find their water. Their metaphorical water. They want to find their water. And that water is in your pocket. But to come and take it from you would be theft, without your permission. That would get them into hot water, pardon the pun. But that's not what they want to do. They want to do it the nice way. So what they do is, they make a monkey out of you. Just do this for a second. In your mind, mentally, go home. Mentally. Go home, open the door, walk in, right? Now, I'll give you a few moments. Start making a list. If you can at least make a list of 5 things mentally, make a mental note of 5 things that you have at home, which today you wonder, why did I ever buy that? You can't tell me that no, Swami Nuhansa, there is nothing like that. From the exercise machine on which today you hang your clothes to dry, yes, that walker, to the air fryer that you only used once, to that lamp, the halogen lamp, that you only used twice because you thought, no, this thing doesn't really do what I wanted. It's not big enough. So you went back to your old lamp. Or maybe there's the touch lamp. Oh, sorry. The touch lamp, which you thought, that's quite nice. It's quite neat. It's very convenient. It's there. Or maybe to the potpourri. When you got it, it smelled very nice, but you had to keep on replacing the stuff, but you just didn't have the patience for that. And now it's just there. It's rotting away. Or maybe some ornament that you have at home. Make a list of 5 things. When you got it, you thought, this is the thing that I've been waiting for my whole life. Where were you? God has finally looked upon me. He has given me the gift that I've been waiting for my whole life, and you took it home. Now you have it. You've had it for the last 4 or 5 years. But you don't use it. You don't look at it. It's just there. It's just taking up space. But you can't bring your mind up to throw it either. You know, we have this hoarding mentality about us, don't we? Yeah? It's the Asian mentality. Yes, I know that. We don't want to throw things away because when we try to, we always think, you know, what if? What if I just might need it one day? Someday. So our houses are only so big because we have so many things that we have to keep, which we bought impulsively. And now you just can't bring your mind up, make your mind up to throw it because you know how much you spent for it. You spent a fair few pennies, so you can't bring your mind up to throw it. Come on, make a list of 5 things. You know what they are. No, you can't include your wife. Make a list of 5 things which when you bought home, when you brought home, you thought, you know, that was the bee's knees, right? It was the be-all and end-all, that's all you wanted in your life, and it was going to make you so happy and delighted and wonderful and amazing, and it was going to turn your life over. Huh? But 4 or 5 years you've had it now, and now you begin to realize, why did I bother? It's just taking up space. But in that moment, why did you buy it? Because they made a monkey out of you. That's why. Because if they just walked up to you and said, can I have your money? You'd have said, go away. You've got another thing coming if you think I'm just going to give you my money. So they have to tease it out of you. Now, I've got nothing against people who do marketing. In fact, I have a lot of respect to them, or for them, because they are ingenious. They really are. See how they work their magic on you. They make you feel victimized. I'm going to help you understand this. You know, we talked about the roller coaster ride. Yeah? Now you feel victimized. Even being sat on a roller coaster. Because now you know what they do to you. We talked about going to watch a movie. Right? Watching a film on TV. And now you know how the director victimizes you. Right? So now I say, let's think about what advertising does to you. I ask you why you think these flowers are beautiful and you have no answer. Because now you have to accept and admit that beauty is not in the flower. So much so that we have this saying, beauty lies in the eyes of the beholder. Right? You say that. But you still see beauty out there, don't you? We say that. I mean, you know, we say that among in and amongst ourselves. You know, beauty lies in the eyes of the beholder. Beauty is only skin deep. And we say all these things. Well, beauty lies in the eyes of the beholder. Why do you do your makeup then? Ladies? Gents, if you're into that sort of thing? It's a different world now, you know. Anything goes, right? So you can't make any assumptions. Why do you do your makeup then? If beauty lies in the eyes of the beholder, your makeup pencil shouldn't be on your lip. It should be on somebody else's eye. If that's where beauty is. So why do you still do your makeup? Why can't you just convince yourself that you're beautiful? If it's in the eye of the beholder, just walk in front of the mirror, look at whatever you see in it and go, you're pretty enough. All right, let's go. But you can't. Anyway, side note number one. Please bring me back in case I get distracted too much. This is a little note for the boys, for the gents, for the young men out there. Right? Now, when you look at someone and you think they're pretty, and you fall head over heels for them, right? Especially if they've got their makeup on. I've got something to tell you. And I'm sorry, this is not an insult or an offensive comment or remark towards anybody. The truth is this. They don't think they're pretty themselves. So why do you? Someone walks up in front of the mirror, does their makeup, what they're telling themselves is, I don't look good enough. That's why I need my makeup. Then, why does someone else look at them and go, you're pretty? End of side note, come back to the main discussion. If you want more information about that, please contact 077. Come and see me after the sermon. So I can try and talk more sense into you. Because this is where most young people fail. When confronted with so-called beauty, the beast within you rises. Then you become uncontrollable. For as long as you believe beauty is out there in the world, right, both men and women, girls and boys, you go looking for that beauty. And what has happened to you will happen to you. Yeah. There are single people here and married people here. See, they've all done the U-turn and they've come back. But when you got onto that porua, Santhiya is a poranua. When you get onto that porua, right, you convince yourself that this is the thing I've been waiting for my whole life, right? And then from this moment on, I shall be happy as happy can be. So why have you come to the sermon today then? Shouldn't it be you who I should be coming to see? To get some advice on happiness? Anyway, I've got nothing against anyone because I myself was a married man. So I understand what it's like. This is what has given me the liberty to speak to you so freely and so honestly and so frankly. So I know, because as I said on one of the first sermons, you know, I didn't fall from the sky. I know what life is like. I've experienced it. I may not have done all the things that you've gotten yourselves up to, but I've done a fair few things in my life. And this is where you've come back, to the sasana. The Sambuddha sasana is where you will find your happiness. Ultimately. That's why they call it the ultimate happiness. When all happiness is not enough, when every happiness that life can offer is just not enough. I'm someone who's greedy for happiness. You settle for less. I won't. You know, you settle for a nice house, a nice car, a nice wife, a nice husband, some children, a nice family, a nice meal out, a nice outing, right? A nice wedding, a nice party. You settle for that. I've had all that and I thought, no, that's not enough. I need more. So if ever in your life you realize that you are not content with the happiness that you enjoy right now, come and talk to me. I will show you a greater happiness than that. So really, I am the greediest of them all. Mirror, mirror on the wall. Who's the greediest of them all? Me. Not you. I am so thirsty. I was so hungry for happiness. I went looking for it to the end of the world. And I found it. You have come here asking, Swaminarayan, what is the secret? So I share it with you. Just the very fact that you're all here. And please don't feel I'm talking to you in a disparaging tone or, you know, thinking that I'm offending you or insulting you. Because I was there, ladies and gentlemen. I want you to experience something bigger, something better, something greater than what you experience right now. Happiness is for all of us. It does not belong to the Buddhists. It does not belong to the Christians or the Muslims or the Hindus. Happiness is for all human beings. It belongs to all of us. It's just the way you look at the world. It's just your perspective. You just need to accept that happiness doesn't come from the outside, and it's yours. For as long as you go looking for it, as long as you think that these flowers are going to make you happy, believe you me, you will always have to keep staring at them for your happiness. And then when it starts to wither away and die, now how does that leave you feeling? The same as the flowers, withered away. See, when you outsource your happiness, I'll say that word again. When you outsource your happiness, they get to decide whether you are happy or not. Are you up for that? Put your hand up if you are okay with that. For someone else to decide whether you are happy or not. See, none of you are. Then why don't we learn how to be happy within ourselves and not expect other people to make us happy? But for that, you have to first accept that other people don't make you unhappy either. Other people or other events or other objects, they are not the source of your unhappiness. They are not the source of your disappointments. You make your own happiness. And you make your own unhappiness. How so? That is what we are here to learn now. What does advertising do? Let's take a simple example and walk through it. The reason I'm talking to you about advertising is not because I've got anything against advertising, but they have mastered this principle. I don't know whether they all, you know, to work in advertising, you have to go and be a monk for 3 years or something. It seems like, you know, they've mastered this art of vexing people and then making a monkey out of them. Like the tribesmen who get their monkeys to go and find their water, the advertising companies, again, nothing against them. Okay? So the advertising companies, what they do is they make a monkey out of you. They need their water that's in your pocket right now, or it's in your bank account, or it's in your plastic card. To get it out of you, they have to cajole you. They have to sweet talk you. They have to make you feel that your happiness is with them. Now, walk along with me. Let's hold my hand and let's walk along. They have to convince you that your happiness is right now with them. Shall I do a bit of marketing with you? Let's see if I can get one of these out without... Oh, yes. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a very special flower. You may not believe me right now, but this is a very special flower. It brings you long life. All you have to do is wake up every morning and dip this in a bit of glass of water, lukewarm, not too hot, not too cold. Take it out and just sprinkle it on your face. This has some magical powers. It brings you immortality. And it gives you a nice facial complexion. If you wish, from time to time, you can take a bit of the stem . Use a small pestle and mortar and crush it. Add just a tiny bit of salt with a bit of turmeric. Make a paste out of it. Sprinkle some rose water. And with your little finger, no other finger works for this. With your little finger, take just a little bit of it and rub it on your nose, on the tip of it, 2 times a day. One early morning and one before you go to bed. Do this for 500 years and you shall live forever. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you marketing. And now, if you wish to have this flower, please sign the dotted line. You can make monthly payments of $9.99. No deposit required. Marketing. Have you not heard the saying, one man's trash is another man's treasure? Or another one man's treasure is another man's trash, whichever way you want to look at it. Does that not tell you that an object in itself is neither treasure nor trash? This is trash. But what I have been able to do is make you think that this is treasure. It all is a trick of the mind. This is what we call marketing. Now, of course, you don't accept what I say. But when you watch TV, as they say, as seen on TV, I wish sometimes they spell that as with another S. When it's seen on TV, right, they convince you, just think about how they come and, you know, when they present these things, they don't bring just any Tom, Dick and Harry to talk about it, right? Just look at the marketing, you know, those brands, you know, the big brands. Why do they have to make use of popular figures? Think about this. Why do they have to make use of sports stars, actors, actresses? People that you admire. What's the deal? Why can't it just be Siripala from downtown? Because you don't accept his word. You don't accept his word. Why on billboards, on your way back home, just observe and you'll understand what I'm talking about. On billboards, they'll have an advertisement for a motorcycle. Okay? What's the advertisement for? A motorcycle. So there'll be a motorcycle on the billboard, and next to it will be a half-clad woman. What, buy one, get one free, is it? What's the deal? This is all psychology. In other words, tricks of the mind. You will be victimized if you don't understand the Dhamma. That is why today you have that list of 5 things at least at home which you fell victim to. Someone said on TV, someone said on a billboard, someone said as you walked into a store, I present you elixir. Take this. It will give you long life. You fell for it. You walked home with it. And today you're wondering there, why did I even buy it? Impulsive buying. They know how to work your impulsion. Now you feel victimized. You know, just for the sake of me asking you to do it, as you go home, after you go back home today, just have a walk around. You know, go into a bedroom, go into the living room, go into the kitchen, and just make a mental note of all the things that you have at home today. You wish, I don't know why I bought it. You know, children fall for this all the time, and you tell them that's because they're not mature enough. You tell them, you know, don't believe everything everybody says, Puta. Says Tati. Who bought the remote controlled teepo? So now with his remote control, he can control the teepo. It moves left and right. On TV, it looked like the next thing you should have. You know, without one, you are nobody. Remember when they first did marketing for smoking, and later on that got banned, right? Perhaps in your younger years, where smoking was the fashion, right? It was fashionable to smoke. What did they say about smoking? The true making of a gentleman. Remember? Was it true? Today, retrospectively, you can answer this question. Is it very gentlemanly to smoke today? I'm not giving you the answers. You can come up with your own answers. Otherwise, anyone who is a smoker might feel that I'm offending them. No. I'm not here to offend anybody. Do you think that smoking is the true mark of a gentleman today? But back then, remember, when smoking was first becoming a thing, like when we imported smoking, as we import all kinds of rubbish, when we imported smoking, right, there were boards everywhere, on the newspapers, on TV. It was all over the place. It was in your face, quite literally, in your face. See, it didn't have to be true what they said, right? They said smoking makes you more presentable. They said smoking gets you places. They said smoking gives you better health. They said that. Because at the monastery, we recently did a program for drug prevention. You know, how do young children in today's day and age, you know, how can they be more aware of drugs and various other substances? Because it's all over the place. Right, in our Dhamma school, at the monastery, we do these programs from time to time to keep our children safe. Because we know that they are here, they have been born into this world for bigger and greater things. We don't want them to be spoiled and ruined by, you know, the silly and foolishness that goes on around the world. So, when we did that program, the Swaminarayanas who prepared the program, they went and found newspaper articles, advertisements and so on that said smoking helps, it gives you a nice, it gives you a fresh breath. They said it gives you a good health. There are plenty of adverts out there. Not today, of course, it's all banned now, but back then. Was it true? Was it true? If someone said smoking gives you better health, is it true? Today we know that it is not true. Nothing could be further from the truth. So does it have to be true then, when someone says something? Does it have to be true? Is all advertising true then? No. But people fell for it, didn't they? People fell for it. My argument is not about the smoking. I don't care whether people smoke or not. That's not my argument. My argument is something else. My argument is, think about how people get you to do things that they want, how they make a monkey out of you. How does impulsive buying work? Have a think about it. Perhaps when you're online. Now, when you're online buying something, usually you'll add something to your cart and then something else will pop up and say what? While you're here, can we interest you in something else? Sometimes they'll even add it to the cart just to make it easier for you. And then you have to take it out of the cart. If you buy this now with this, you get 10% off. See? And then you buy it nevertheless. You just buy it, impulsive buying. So the question I was asking you earlier is, why is it that we need well-known figures, right, popular people, why do we need them in our advertising material? Why is it that when, you know, just any old man walks up and says, this is the bar of soap I use, why don't you try it as well? That's not convincing enough. But when Aishwarya Rai gets up on stage and says, this is the soap that I use, everybody wants one. Even if she's never used that soap. You know, most people when they do the adverts, you know, they never use that stuff. Sometimes, you know, so there are some foods that are so unhealthy. They never use it. They never eat that stuff. But they'll come on screen and say, this is what you have to eat. I'll tell you why it works, so you can understand how your mind works. The reason it works, ladies and gentlemen, is for the mind to accept that something is true, the mind has to feel pleasantness. It has to feel good. It has to feel joyful. When the mind is joyful, when the mind is good, when the mind feels good, you can put any old rubbish into it. I'll give you a simple example to prove this point to you. When your little one wants some money, pocket money, what's the best time for him to come and ask you for it? After a long day's work? Huh? How do they time it? Sometimes they'll go to the mother and say, Amma, I want some money for the trip. Amma says, what, Putha? Don't go ask Tati now. He's just come out of a phone call from work, right? And I think he's not in a good mood right now, so you better not ask now. You're not going to get a penny. In fact, he might ask you how much money you have right now and confiscate that as well. You ain't going on no trips if you ask Tati now, so let's wait. Let me first take his tea for him. And then why don't you go and switch on the TV for him? See how he's taking you for a monkey? You let people victimize you. Buddha, go switch on the TV first. I'll bring you the tea. I'll bring Tati the tea, right? And then we'll go and ask him how his work. You know, let's just talk to him, you know, talk to him nicely. And then you can tell him about the award that you won from school 10 years ago. He will have forgotten. Of course he will have forgotten, because he's Tati, you know, Tati is like that. You can tell him you won the medal for what, you know, the spoon race. So make him feel good. Make him feel happy. And then tell him how, what a great Tati he is. Sweet talk him. And then Ami will come and say, I have another. That's how you talk to Tati, right? We have string hoppers and polsambal and potato curry and chicken curry today. And Tati will be very happy. And then after he's eaten, then you ask him, Tati, you are good Tati now. So what is this child doing to Tati? Taking him for a monkey. Very tribal, isn't it? Very tribal. Because when the mind is happy, when the mind feels pleasant, when the mind feels joyful, you can put any old rubbish into it. That's why next to the motorbike, you have a half-naked woman. That's why. Just show the bike. No. You can't get their attention. Show the half-naked woman, because you don't have to sell that. That's already sold. Right? From 2 years of age, that's sold. Right? That, you know, the media, the marketing, the friends, they do that. So by the time you're 20, 25, right, you want that in your life, and then put a motorbike, put anything really, even a broken bike next to that, and you want it. Because in that moment, your mind feels elated, it feels joyful. So just whatever you want, just show it at that time. Isn't that why in every advertisement, people are always smiling? Have you never noticed this? Just take any newspaper, right? Even if it's a funeral parlor. Even if it's a funeral director. The people in the shots, they're always smiling. Because a smile begets a smile. See, the easiest way to force a smile on your face is for me to do what? Look at you and smile. You want to try it? You know, because we like to be happy. I mean, we enjoy happiness. So we want people to be happy. And certainly we want ourselves to be in that people, group of people. We want ourselves to be happy. Because you don't want to put up with someone who is always so dumb, so gloomy, right? So miserable. You don't like to spend time with people like that. You like to spend time with people who are upbeat, people who are charismatic, people who are, you know, generally they get along, they're amiable, they're amicable. You want to be with people like that, right? That's how when you see someone who's, you know, who's got a frown, what's up? You know, smile. You know, it doesn't cost you anything. Come on, what's wrong? You try and cheer people up because you want to be among cheerful people. So when you see a smile, you think something good is happening and you want to be part of it. For the same reason. Every advert out there will have people who are smiling. They have a smile on their face. Because if they're smiling, then it has to mean that they are happy. Now who else wants to be happy? Who else wants to be happy? Why are you here? Ah, there we go. So far, you have not achieved happiness in your life. This is the sad, sad story, ladies and gentlemen. It's such a sad story. You've lived for 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 long years and you still haven't achieved happiness, and they know that. So they know that you are always hopeful of a happy day. So whenever you see a smile on someone's face, you want to be part of that happiness because it's a happiness that you're longing for. That's why every advert will have a happy face. Next time you get a newspaper, a magazine, a tabloid, turn the pages and have a look. You walk into a lab of life and see if it is not true. You know, when they're on the... So now why did you buy that exercise machine on which you hang your clothes out to dry tonight, today? Why did you buy that exercise machine? Because when you saw it on TV, right? There was a young woman, perhaps, or maybe a muscular man, right? They got on the bike and they were striding in, right? And smiling away at the camera. No, they weren't sweating at that time. No, of course they weren't. They weren't sweaty. They weren't groggy. No, they were nothing like that. They had their makeup on. You didn't stop to think about all that. You didn't stop to think, how come they don't have a drop of sweat on their foreheads? That didn't cross your mind at that time. All you were looking for is there happiness to be found here? See how desperate we are for happiness. Even the slightest offer, opportunity of happiness, and you are out there to grasp it, to grab it. That is how much we are void of happiness. That is how much you are void of happiness. Because you seek happiness from the outside. That is why advertising works. That's why advertising works. I've got more to say about that. Come back to this. To convince you that this is the best thing to be had, next best thing after sliced bread. But to convince you that this is the best thing to be had, I need to show this to you on TV. Because you watch TV. Yeah? The actual price of one of these things is $4.99. Okay? So that is what I get it for. $4.99. Now, include my, you know, I have to make a living. Right? So I have to pay the bills. I have to look after my children and so on. So for that, I'm going to add another $5. So now it's $9.99. But that's not enough. Because I have to convince you that this is the best thing to be had. So therefore, I have to show this to you either on TV, on newspaper, on radio, or on the internet. Or I have to put a billboard up somewhere. Now, where do I find the money for that? Think and answer embarrassingly. Where do I find, I as the vendor or the manufacturer, where do I find the money to make a monkey out of you? from the monkey itself. So now I can't sell this to you for $9.99 because I have to pay the TV company, the commercial company, to make a commercial and put it, air it. So for that, I have to add another $5. So now it's $14.99. $5 of the $14.99 you pay out of your pocket for what? Sorry, I didn't mean to be so harsh. $5 of that $14.99 you pay for what? So that I can show this to you on TV and convince you that you must part with your money, because your happiness is with me. And you fall for it, don't you? Who pays for it? You pay for it. I don't pay for that. If I had to pay for that, how would I make money? So you pay for the advertising, which is done to fool you to buy this. If this was so good, why would I sell it to you? If this was the best thing in the world, why would I give it to you for in exchange for your money? Shouldn't I keep it with myself? Think about it when you go home and start making the list. Once again, I've got nothing against the advertising companies. Long may they prosper. May they go on to make every success in life. That's not what I'm here for. What I'm here for is to help you realize how, if you don't understand the Dhamma, when you don't understand the Dhamma, you become victimized. And then you believe that you are a victim of circumstances. No, you're not. Let's first fix our attitude. We have this attitude that it's other people who are responsible for my unhappiness. With that attitude, we are getting nowhere. The first thing about Buddhist philosophy is taking responsibility for your own happiness. Without that, you are not even a Buddhist. A Buddhist is someone who takes responsibility for their own happiness. So you don't have the divine beings who decide whether you are going to be happy or not. It's not God who decides whether you are happy or not. It's you. It's not your friends who decide that. It's not the shopkeeper. It's not the salesman. It's not the TV company. It's not the film director. It's not your friend. Not the politicians. But you know, when in and around an election time, you know, people drink just to wash away or drink away their grief because someone has made them unhappy. Who's made them unhappy? The opposition. The opposition has made them unhappy. So who is going to make them happy? The people that they wanted in power. Or the winning party has made them unhappy because they've lost, right? But the opposition was supposed to make them happy. See? And sometimes people get into fights. Arguments, brawls, rows. See, even at home, ladies and gentlemen, you know, in your domestic life, right, at home, if you believe that your vexation is the product of someone else's doing, I'm sorry to say, you will never find happiness in life. Because you will always expect your husband or your wife to free you from suffering. If your husband and your wife could free you from suffering, why did the Buddha come into this world? What was his role? Then what's the purpose of a Buddha? What's the purpose of the Dhamma? What's the purpose of the Sangha? So let's take responsibility for our own happiness. To take responsibility for our own happiness begins with accepting that happiness is not something that comes from the outside. That is where it begins. And by the same token, suffering does not come from the outside. So now I ask you, dearly, are we all prepared to take responsibility for our own happiness? Are you? Are you prepared to stop pointing your finger out from here on? Right, let's forget what you've done up until this point. Because I need you to make this jump mentally before I can take you further on this journey. If you're not prepared to get on this bus, the bus of taking responsibility for my own happiness, then our journey ends here. You have to decide. You have to take whole responsibility, full responsibility. And taking responsibility means, from here on, if someone makes you unhappy, let's not shout at them. Let's stop shouting at them. Let's stop blaming someone else because they've made us unhappy. So let's not find ourselves ever saying things like, "Why do you always make me angry?" Because they don't. If you are prepared to accept that, I can guide you from here on. Because if they are who make you angry, then bring them, you stay at home. So I'll talk to them and ask them not to make you angry. Huh? Now, as a mother, as a father, of course you have to discipline your child. This is not an excuse for that, Buddha, okay? I have to be mindful that there are children in the house and, you know, they're very clever. They'll go home and say, "Ammi, I'm not going to make my bed from today." Swami once said, "It's not me who makes you angry." No. That's not what I'm talking about. You have to make your bed. But Ammi doesn't have to be angry because you've not made your bed. You can pretend to be angry. That's okay. But that has to be a pretend anger. Pretending to be angry is something you do out of, you know, because the child doesn't understand. Sometimes if you say to speak to the child and try to talk, have an intelligent conversation with the child, they don't understand because they're still children. So if you frown at them, maybe hold a finger up, this is the last time I'm telling you this, you better do your homework. Okay, I'm messing with the wrong mother. Right? So perhaps, you know, that's how we learn. That's okay. What I'm talking about is your internal state of mind. I don't want any mother in this audience to feel angry and think that that anger has come to you because of something your child did. Let's shed away that monkiness and let's move forward to a new era. Let's change our way of thinking, because if you're going to be stuck there, you will always be stuck there. Today it will be Lokaputta, tomorrow it will be Churiputta. Today it will be your neighbors, tomorrow it will be your co-workers. How are you going to move on? And forever you will feel victimized. You know, we don't need to be in this victimized mentality. Be free. The Dhamma is here to do what? Set us free. If you feel angry, that's okay. Right? I'm not saying from here on you shouldn't be feeling angry. That's fine. It's if you feel angry, if you feel anger, right, if anger arises in your mind, that's all right. Just come here every Sunday. But here's what I'm asking you not to do. Stop pointing your finger at something else or somebody else. That I want you not to do. Because if you do that, now there's no point in you coming here. Point your finger at yourself and say, "I'm angry because of my fault. Now bring yourself here. I'll help you." What do you think about that? Do we have a deal? Are you up for that? Or do you still believe, no, Swami, no matter what you say, it's other people who make me angry? Huh? Everybody else is fine, it's just my little sister. She's just, She just makes my life impossible. Everyone else is all right. I can get along with everybody else, but my little sister, she's just a pain in the neck. Can you kidnap her? No, it's not your sister that makes you unhappy. It's not your brother that makes you unhappy. You create unhappiness. There's a process by which that happens in the mind, and I will explain it to you. But first, you have to accept to come and sit down in this class. In this class, we only take admissions for those who accept that happiness as well as unhappiness are purely 100% my own making. That is the pre-qualification to be a member of this class or of this club. This is the beginning of a making of an Aryan. If you want to start walking the Noble Eightfold Path, this is the beginning of nobleness. The beginning of nobleness. Taking responsibility. So at the workplace, there will be those who will upset you, annoy you, bother you. They won't do the report in time. They won't send you the email on time. They won't get the job done on time. Maybe not to the way you expect and want them to do. And it may bother you, it might annoy you, it might frustrate you. But here's what I ask you to do. Come to your senses and realize that the anger that has arisen in your mind is not their making. It's yours. If their action should make one angry, then shouldn't they also be angry with what they've done? Think about it. Then shouldn't the next person also be angry with what they've done? Like just to say randomly, you know, you're walking down the street, someone comes and hits you. Okay, or says something to you. You are the one who's angry. They're not angry at what they've done. They may be angry at you, but not at what they've done. And perhaps if, you know, they're with someone who's their friend or their family, they're not angry either at what they've done. So then if one thing, one action can make, you know, it is what makes one angry, it has to make all of us angry. But that is not true. It doesn't work like that. So the long and short of this talk today, ladies and gentlemen, is let's take responsibility for our own salvation. If and only if you can bring yourself there mentally, can we go forward on this journey. I think most, if not all of you, are there. And hopefully from today's talk, you've been able to convince yourself the same. Until you convince yourself that you are the maker, you are the architect of your own suffering, I can't help you to stop doing that. I showed you the video last week to convince you of that. The video was neither a source of pain nor was it a source of pleasure. However, having watched it, you experienced both. So now you have a problem that requires a solution. You have a question which needs an answer. So I'm prepared to accept that the video was neither a source of pleasure nor was it a source of pain. But then why and how did I experience pleasure and pain in the same sitting? How was that possible? There's a process that is responsible for that. There's a method. There's a way that it happens, and it's all happening in your mind right now. As much as you feel that you think, it's not you thinking, thinking happens. That is the way it works. Right now you think you're listening to me. You think you're looking at me. That's not what's going on. Thinking is happening. Looking is happening. Hearing is happening. Alongside that, you are happening. This is what we call the self. That is also the product of a process. Here's where I want to take you. One step at a time, one Sunday at a time, I'll take you there. So if I shared all this with you on the first day, you wouldn't have come the second day. Because this is a journey. You know, you've got to go to grade 1 before you go to grade 2. That's the way it works. We all started somewhere, we're all making progress, we're all on that journey. I am still to achieve my arahanthood. One day, whenever it happens, it'll happen. I'm still on a journey. But if we've come somewhere, I want you to come with me. So we can all cross that finish line someday, one day. But if you don't begin, you never end. That is why your vote of confidence in the Sambuddha Sasana, I salute. There could be a million things you could be doing on a Sunday morning, but you've decided to be here. That is because today you've realized that you have to commit yourselves. That is why. This is not a commitment you have made to me as a Swaminuhanse, or a commitment you have made to your friend to come here today. This is the commitment that you have made to your own salvation. Very soon you realize, when you come here on a Sunday, you bring very little, but you take away a lot. If today is your first day, you may not feel that way, but soon enough you will. That is perhaps why someone might have invited you to come along, because they have begun to understand the change that is happening within them. Here's how you will begin to experience this change. If you begin to understand this teaching, ladies and gentlemen, I think I concluded this with this last week, you will become a better mother at home. A mother who does not get annoyed, agitated, frustrated, angry with their children. A mother who can think less of herself and think more about her children. Because without the Dhamma, you don't have a mother, you have a selfish mother. That's why today you can only feel motherish towards your own child. You don't feel the same way about every child. If two children are stuck, you know, say they're stuck in a building that's burning down, and you can only save one, need I ask the question? I don't want to insult you, so I won't ask you the question. If one is your child and the other isn't, that is not a mother. That's a selfish mother. Why selfish? Think about the self first and then the child. Saving one child doesn't make you all that happy, but saving the other helps you keep your sanity. So whose benefit are you thinking about first? Let's say one child, you know, one of the children who's not your child, you know, they're fully formed. The other child is handicapped. Maybe the doctors say, you know, this child can only live for another 15 years. Whereas this child, you know, he's a promised child. He can go on to become a great man. Still, you can't stop yourself from saving your child. Because you feel that this is my child. In other words, you feel yourself first and then the child. Every connection that you have in this world is all self-centered. And you can't help it. You can't help it because the Dhamma is here to help, and the Dhamma still needs to be planted in your mind. And once it starts growing, once it starts flourishing and blossoming, you will begin to experience firsthand what I'm trying to explain to you here. Right now, hear me out. We have begun to go through that transformation, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks to our teachers. Thanks to the Dhamma, thanks to the Buddha. I see every child as a child. But in your minds you have your child and every other child. So your child is separate from every other child. Your child is special to you. That's okay. Let it be so for the time being. That's why I said, I want you to be the best mother a mother can be, not a selfish mother. Because here's what happens to a selfish mother. When something happens to her child, she cries. She weeps. She grieves. She gets a heart attack. But if you are just a mother and not a selfish mother, now you don't weep. You don't cry. Because you do what a good mother does. You do what a good mother has to do. It is possible. This is all possible. So that is what we are here for. To free ourselves from suffering so that we can become the best mother a mother can be. To become the best father a father can be. To become the best friend a friend can be. Why? You know, today you have a best friend, don't you? What a pity. Now I know this will probably go against all social norms that you've come to learn. Right? This will go against every principle we hold dear in society. I'm not here to cherish society, I'm here to tell you the truth. Let society be, but what I'm trying to explain to you is, when you have a best friend, as I once did, I remember when my best friend died. It tore my heart. I remember that day. It was an unexpected accident. But today I have learned how to be a friend and not to be a best friend to anyone in particular. When you love just one, you lose everybody else. When you can love all the same, that is a different kind of love. It's not a selfish love. In a selfish love relationship, you are there. It is self-centered. My interests have to be met in a self-centered love, in a self-centered relationship. But where a relationship is not self-centered, where it is not selfish, you no longer have interests that have to be met. Mentally, the mind doesn't need anything to be happy. Physically, yes. The body needs things to be happy. Not happy, but to be comfortable. That is why we call them the four requisites. Otherwise, you'll ask me, why, Swami Nasa, do you go on Pindapatha then? That's why. Because that is for the body, not for the mind. That is why into the alms bowl you can offer anything you like. That is why yogurt and rice and pudding and gravy and water, if you wish, can all go into the same alms bowl. Because that is what the body needs. But when the mind begins to have wants, not needs, wants, now the mind wants to have starters, main course, dessert, follow-up. That's not what the body needs. That's what the mind wants. In other words, why does the mind want this? Because the mind thinks that is what brings me happiness. So we come back to the point that we discussed earlier. When you believe that happiness comes from the outside world, you think that these flowers are beautiful. Or you think the flowers are ugly. Either way. Because if you like blue flowers, you don't like them and you'll tell me that these flowers, they don't make me happy, they make me unhappy. Look at them, ugly. Whereas if you like red flowers, you'll say, look at them, pretty, gorgeous, aren't they? No, the answer is they're neither. It's neither pretty nor is it ugly. It's just a flower. That is a state of equanimity. Upeksha. How do we get there? The Dhamma is the answer. It won't happen to you overnight. Don't worry. Give yourself time. You know, consider this, let's say a diploma course. How long is a diploma course? At least a year, right? At least a year. A good diploma course is at least a year. And how long have you been coming? Which number is this sermon? Eight? Eight. Thank you, sir. This is the 8th of 52. So, this is the diploma course. Do it for a year and see the difference it will make in your lives. Whether you believe it or not, already you have begun to change. Go and ask the people you live with. They will tell you. your change has started to happen. Like a little sapling that is just a little shoot that comes out of the ground. If you keep watching it every day, you don't see it grow. But look away, go away for a few months, come back and then look at it. It'll have grown into a plant. You see you every day. Therefore, you don't realize the transformation that you're going through. But I promise you, 6 months from now, your friends, your family, your children, your parents, they'll have some very interesting things to say about you. I'll just say interesting for now, because I don't want to make any promises. You can experience that for yourself. They will begin to say, I'm beginning to see a change in you. So the true test of this Dhamma is, have you become a better mother, a better father, a better son, a better daughter, a better parent, a better teacher, a better doctor? Anything. Do whatever you have to do in your life, provided it's not an unmeritorious deed. If you're not stealing, if you're not killing, if you're not backstabbing, right? If you're not lying to make a living, then do whatever you have to do. Just don't do the unmeritorious deeds. There are 10 of them. One of these days we'll talk about it. Just make sure you don't do those things. Because in doing those things, I am not concerned about the harm that you inflict on others. I don't worry about them. Because they're not the ones who are here. You are here. I'm worried and concerned about the harm that you do unto yourselves. If you have come here and you have given a vote of confidence in the Mahasangha, then the Mahasangha has a responsibility to help guide you. So refrain from all unmeritorious deeds, not because of the damage and the harm that it does to others, but because of the harm and damage it does to you. That's why. Because karma is always fair. It's never unfair. And it's never subjective. Karma is always objective. What you give is what you get. Right now, there may be some who are a bit skeptical about karma. That's fine. Soon enough, you will realize. I was probably the most skeptical person you'll ever have met in your life. Because my father, he was a headfirst scientist. He always said, no, Buddha. Science is the answer to everything. He drilled science into my head. I didn't have much regard for him back then. I said, he's also a man, I'm also a man. What's the difference? He eats, I eat. He sleeps, I sleep. He drinks, I drink. What's so special? I used to ask. That's because I hadn't learned the science that he taught. The same respect that today you might have towards Einstein, Newton, and the great scientists of our times. Imagine if you find the science to real happiness, if you discovered that. Newton can only tell you that if you jump, you will fall. But there is one scientist who we've seen, who lived in our times, who said, do this and you will never be disappointed, angry, sad, frustrated ever again. Now that's worth studying, isn't it? They don't teach you that at school. In fact, I don't think they even teach you in the Dhammapada. This is not the story of how the prince Siddhartha walked on 7 lotuses. This is not that story. This is not how his mother was Queen Mahamaya or his father was King Suddhodana and how they lived happily. This is not this story. I know that story, but I don't think that's the story that you're here to learn. Because you also know that story. What good has that done into your lives? Has that made you happier? Has that made you less angry? Has that made you less disappointed? The story is, that's history. They say history is good for the books. But what changes us is the science, is the truth, the philosophy. That is what we are here to learn. So come along. Let's take this journey one step at a time. Right, to sum up, here's what we discussed today. Vexation and happiness, or pleasure. From here onwards, I'm going to call it pleasure, not happiness. At the beginning I said, there's a happiness that you understand and there's a happiness that I understand. From here on, I want to refer to that happiness that you experience as pleasure. Because pleasure is a product of relief from vexation. This. Letting go. That is pleasure. Happiness is where there is no vexation in the first place. Where there is no pain to begin with. There's no pain at all. Pleasure is when you have a headache and you take a pill and you are healed and you feel better. That is pleasure. But happiness is when you didn't have the headache in the first place. So why do we settle for pleasure when we can have happiness? So they're not the same thing. They're very different. What I want you to do is, for the rest of the week, go back again, you know, as you live at home, out there. First of all, whenever you experience this unhappiness, frustration, anger, sorrow, grief, whatever, please stop pointing that finger outwards. If you do, then I can't help you. Bring them here and you stay at home. But if you will accept that the problem is mine and my alone, then you bring whoever the problem is here. How's that? Whoever is the problem maker, bring them here. If you think it's your brother who annoys you, bring your brother here, you stay at home. But if you believe that it is you who make your own problems, it is you who are responsible for your own unhappiness and sorrow and grief and fear, then you bring yourself here and we will work together. This is all based in a world in which you exist as a self. Because when you have a self, you have to protect it. And every effort that you make is an effort to protect yourself. Self-preservation, self-protection, all with self-identification. That's a trailer for a future talk. Right? Time's up for today then. If you want this love, $14.99. When you walk out, you know, as you walk, drive back home, just look at the billboards, right? And have a look at what they have on there. How next to every product that they have to sell, they'll have either someone with a smile on their face, or maybe someone who is half naked, right? And think about why. What was the thinking behind it? And think about how they're making a monkey out of you. I don't want you to feel victimized. Whether you feel it or not, in fact, I don't want you to be victimized. Feeling or not is another. Because all this while you didn't feel it. Until I said so. And now you feel it. That's not the deal. What I want you to be is not victimized. I don't want you to be victimized. When you can be free. The Buddha's Dhamma is here to free you. Use it and free yourself. Once you're free, you don't have to come back here again. After you've qualified, you've got your diploma, don't have to come back here again. Then, charata bhikkave charikam bahujana hitaya bahujana sukhaya attaya hitaya sattaya sukhaya deva manussana. Once you have gotten the Dhamma, you can now then go and help others. You don't have to come back here. This is a hospital. Once you're cured, get the heck out and give the bed to another patient. This is not a hotel for you to come and spend your leisure time. This is a hospital. When you come to the Jetavanarama Buddhist hospital, which is where I'm from, you will see what I'm talking about. There are lots of patients in there, and we treat them. My teacher treats me, and everyone else at the monastery, and whoever comes, walks through our doors, walks through our gates, we sit down with them, and we give them the medicine of the soul, the real medicine. That's why we are so ever grateful to the Buddha, his Dhamma, and the Mahasangha, who has treasured this teaching and passed it down through the generations to us. The Tripitaka itself does not have the answer, ladies and gentlemen, because you need to know how to understand the Tripitaka. It's not the same. Reading the Tripitaka, you understand one thing, but once you begin to look at it insightfully, you see a whole new world. The Guru Swami Nawase always says, you have to have the key before you start reading the Tripitaka. That key is passed down from generation to generation through what we call the noble lineage, the Arya Kalanavata. So now you're all becoming members of that. What I see when I look at you is a future where a lot of people can benefit from the Buddha's teaching. And I know it is not I who will be preaching to them. Of course not. I won't be here 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now, but you will. The young boys and girls, young people and amongst you will be. You will be there. And I can't travel the whole world preaching to people, but you can share this Dhamma with your friend, with your cousin, with your brother, with your sister, with your husband, your wife, your co-worker, your colleague. You can. I'm not the one who's going to be doing that. You're going to be doing that. That is the future I envisage. I can see that future as I look at you. So together we can make that vision a reality. The Buddha had the vision. He said, 5,000 years my sasana will prevail. But he's not here today, is he? So clearly he wasn't talking about something that he was going to do alone. He was talking about all of us collectively doing this. So once you begin to be healed, then you can pass on the teaching so that someone else can also be healed. Should you all become monks and nuns for that? Certainly not. This is a way of life, this is a lifestyle that is not for everyone. The Dhamma is what heals you, not the robe. I've seen plenty of people in robes who are sometimes worse than laymen and women. Sorry to say. So it's not the robe that heals one, it's the Dhamma. Whether you're in a robe or clad in white, matters not. Take the Dhamma and may the Dhamma heal you. Right, let us transfer the merits and bring today's sermon to a close. Okay. Let us all take a moment then to transfer the merits that we have all acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, in making invitation to preach the Dhamma, listening to the Dhamma, preaching the Dhamma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds today. First and foremost, let us remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of the Lord Buddha's teaching, and with immense gratitude towards the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas who have since time immemorial projected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha. Let us transfer these merits to all of them. Let us also take this moment to transfer these merits to the members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all of the chapters who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and have committed themselves towards the betterment of all sentient beings. Let us also take this moment to transfer these merits to my teacher, Guru Swami Nawase, as well as all the monks resident at the monastery and the Anagarika and Anagarika communities attached to the monastery. Let us also take this moment to transfer these merits to those who make great efforts to spread far and wide the teachings of the Buddha, be there by translating these talks, sharing them out with others, or inviting others to join them. May by the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May by the power of these merits, they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to our devotees and friends of the monastery, who for the sake of merits continue to sustain the Mahasangha To all those who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes and medicines, as well as provide for the construction of the monastery, as well as those who extend their well wishes and pass on their know-how, may they all rejoice in the merits that we have all acquired today. Let us also take a moment to transfer this merits to our mothers and fathers, husbands and wives, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our friends and our acquaintances, our teachers, our employers and our employees, and to everyone and anyone who has helped us, supported us and assisted us in any way, shape or form possible and available to them. May by the power of these merits they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nirvana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to the Devas and Brahmas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as all the numerous gods and deities who protect and preserve the Sambuddha Sasana. Let us also transfer these merits to the guardian deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May by the power of these merits they prosper in divine power and wisdom, and may they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to those who sacrifice their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation, to the members of the armed forces as well as the police force. Let us transfer these merits to them. Let us also transfer these merits to those who might have lost their lives in the war, be their friend or foe. Let us also transfer these merits to those who might have lost their lives in natural calamities, natural disasters, such as the tsunamis and earthquakes, landslides, pandemics, forest fires, blizzards, pandemics and so on, reminding ourselves that in this infinitely long journey of samsara, they will all have been mothers and fathers to us, brothers and sisters to us, friends and acquaintances to us, those who will have provided us, supported us and assisted us in any way, shape or form available and possible to them. May by the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nirvana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And let us resolve that may by the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of Arahants on this blessed land. And finally, by the power of all the blessings and by the power of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day, you and I, and everyone who's helped make this program a success, become an Arahatan Mahanse, or an Arahatarinin Mahanse, in this very life itself, and in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. And the members of the Mahasangha will now transfer their blessings to you. Raga ginnan nidanva, dvesha ginnan nidanva, moha ginnan nidanva, nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita tara vetnva, nibbana parana sukhayan sukhita tara vetnva. Mamada siyalu loka siyalu satmayo, nibbana parana sukhayan sukhita tarvetnva, nibbana parana sukhayan sukhita tarvetnva, nibbana parana sukhayan sukhita tarvetnva. Raga vini miveva, dvesha vini miveva, moha vini miveva, nivansapala deva, nivansapala deva,
තුන්වන්ගේ සුවිසි අනන්ත මහා ගුණමෙලෙන් සියලු ලෝක සියලු සත්ත්වයන් නිබ්බාන පරම සුඛයෙන් සුගතව වෙත්වා. සාදු සාදු සාදු.